Everyone doing all right today? Listen, everything else has had mistakes today. So I'm going to be on par for the course. I'm on my end. Can you hear me? I know you can. Can you hear me online? All right. Listen, I got to give mad props to Grace. She was so professional up here with Declan getting in her way. Like, that was probably the most professional performance I've seen from her. And, kids, you can leave. And I'm just sitting there watching it. I'm like, oh, Declan, don't do that. Don't do that. And Grace is just, you know, arm blocking him, singing. I don't think she missed a beat. Like, she gets that from me, by the way, in case you were curious. Declan gets that from his mother. She's in the nursery. She texts me. She goes, you know, Declan's up there. I'm like, obviously, I see him up there. But hey, just because things happen doesn't mean we can't move forward. And so then with the string breaking, by the way, this is like 2 weeks in a row that's happened because my string broke on a guitar the last time we played. So Gay, you're up next week. So that's just what's going to happen. But Gay has all the equipment to save everyone's day. So I think we're going to be fine. So we are teaching this morning on a topic that is somewhat known, but yet we don't really ever dive into. And it's the sin of slothfulness. And what I told Rick this morning, my hope was, is to find a YouTube video where we could have on the screen where a sloth would start from that side and slowly get to the other side. And my goal would be to try to get my sermon done before it reached the other end. But I know you guys too well, and I know you'd be too distracted that you wouldn't hear anything that I have to say. And you'd keep putting bets on the sloth and me, and then we don't want that in the church. So I decided against it. But you have heard it said before, don't do tomorrow what you can do the day after tomorrow. That's right. So if you've ever been in college, you've probably said that a time or two, right? I know I have. I'm not going to do tomorrow what I can wait and do the next day or waiting to do next week. And this attitude of laziness and slothfulness just seems to be one that we're all familiar with, like I said, but it's very rarely one that we ever really talk about. And so I just want to kind of give you a disclaimer before we get started that I do know and I'm very much aware that there are many people in this crowd who are hardworking individuals. And so when I already start off the sermon by saying we're preaching on laziness, in your mind, you're already starting to check out. And so I just want to challenge you to hang tight, to listen to the message, and maybe you could pull something away from it, because I'm telling you, the people we're going to talk about today are the last people that, in my mind, biblically, I would look at as a lazy person. And yet this sin destroyed both of their lives. And so we're going to talk about a few characters, and I just, like I said, I know it's easy to just dismiss a topic that you may not be known for. You know, because like I said, very rarely do I see many lazy people in here. If there are, it's probably me. I run the line on that one. But even in my own mind, I'm like, well, I don't think I'm that lazy. I'm just really smart, and so I don't have to do all the physical labor because I beat them up mentally in here, and I justify it for myself, okay? And so it's easy to just say, you know what, this isn't going to apply to me, but I just challenge you to hang with me. And so what I want to do is I want to begin by simply reading a few verses, and then we're going to dive into it, okay? First one comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 18. And it says, through sloth, the roof sinks in. And though indolence, the house leaks. Proverbs 12:24 says, the hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor. Now, we could dissect all these verses if we want to, but I just want you to hear what is being said. Proverbs 12:27-28. Whoever is slothful will not roast in his game. But the diligent man will get precious wealth, and in the path of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death. Proverbs 13:4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. And Proverbs 26:16. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. Now there are a lot of verses, believe it or not, that talk about this idea of slothfulness or laziness. But there's a common theme with all the verses that I had just read to you, and there are many more. Did you catch it? And I know you're probably sitting there thinking, yeah, they all deal with laziness. Well, yeah, that's true, but there's another common theme that you may have missed if you aren't paying attention to it, and it's this. Did you notice that all of these verses are written by the same person? Ecclesiastes and Proverbs were written by the same man. Do you know who they were? Solomon. Both of these books, Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, was written by the man Solomon. And when you read Proverbs, the book of wisdom, because Solomon was the wisest man who's ever lived outside of Christ himself, he speaks heavily on this topic of laziness and slothfulness. Because what Solomon is trying to do is write to the people who are coming up behind him. He's writing to the children who are learning what it's like to be a man, to be a father, to be a king. And so he's writing this book of wisdom for all of the people like me who are coming up behind him and saying, listen, learn from this. And when I read these passages, when I read the book of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, you see that Solomon has a lot to say on this topic. It's almost as if he hates it, that he can't stand lazy people, almost as if it's personal to him. Would you agree? That's because it is. So when I started looking at this sermon, because I was complaining to Rick without complaining this morning, by saying, I've never written a sermon on sloth before, so I'm glad I got that one. And I told him, I said, I've been kind of walking through some of this stuff, and I hope that I present this well, but when I was doing the research for the sermon, it kind of blew my mind because the two guys we're talking about, Solomon being one, is somebody I would never look at as being lazy. So why would a guy like that have a personal connection with the sin of slothfulness? Why would someone like Solomon have a deep hatred for this idea of laziness? Well, it's because it affects him greatly, and here's why. Rick preached a sermon a couple weeks ago on another sin, on lust, and he gave into this story about David, and we're going to piggyback off that, and we're going to recap some of what he talked about, just to give you the illustration. 2 Samuel chapter 11 starts the story of David's fall. David was a man after God's own heart. God himself said that. And he's the only person that I know of that God has ever spoken that about, where this is a man after my own heart, but yet we look at David's fall and we see what happened. So 2 Samuel chapter 11, at the very beginning, starting off, says this, "In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, and David remained in Jerusalem." Pause there for a second. Do you already see laziness happening? I mean, we see it from the very first verse. What did it say again? It says, look at it, "In the spring of that year, comma," which is basically saying, this is when the time for the kings to go out with their men. Why would the Bible say that? Well, because they want us to emphasize the fact that David did not do what kings should do at that time. Kings would go out to battle with their soldiers, with their warriors, and they'd be calling the shots, and they'd be kind of behind the lines a little bit, but they're still nonetheless out there in the battlefield with him, with the people. And so this book, 2 Samuel, wants us to know that David chose not to do that. He chose to stay home in the comforts of his own palace, in the comforts of his own house. And so he sent Joab and Joab's servants and all of David's servants with all of Israel. And I find that interesting that he sent all of them out, and yet he remained. And what happened when he remained? Well, if you were here, you listened to Rick's sermon. It says, verse 2, "It happened late one afternoon," and this is where God just shows up real big for me, where he's like, "This is, you have to use this." "Because David arose from his couch." I was like, if nothing says slothfulness, it's right there, Lord. Thank you so much. It says David arose. Now, don't hear me say that if you're sitting on the couch, you're lazy. All right? Sometimes we need a good a nap on a Sunday afternoon. Not in church, but Sunday afternoon. "And so it happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house. He saw on the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was beautiful." You know the rest of the story because Rick preached about it. And I do challenge you, if you haven't heard that sermon, go back and check it out. I thought Rick did a great job talking about lust. It's a tough topic, but he nailed it. And so we're looking at David's life, and David should have been out fighting with his men. Instead, he was comfortable, wasn't he? He was comfortable. He thought that the people that they would be fighting against would be really no challenge for Israel. So he's like, you don't really need me. You could take Joab and you could take the rest of the army and all of Israel and everybody else. I'm going to stay back and I'm just going to kind of hang low for a little bit. And then it says he was on the couch, which I'm like, that's awfully specific. Because I think they want to really reiterate this idea of a slothful life. And so as he gets up off the couch, he just goes for a stroll up, down, you know, and he's walking up on top of the palace, and he overlooks and sees this beautiful woman bathing and decides, I need to have her. How does this affect Solomon? Well, if you continue reading through 2 Samuel, you're going to notice that David led to more sin based on that sin, which started because he had an attitude of laziness, of slothfulness. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, so he went and had sin, made Bathsheba come over. They had a time together. She got pregnant. Uh-oh, this is a publicity nightmare. We've got to cover this up. So what does he do? He sends out word to get Uriah on the front line of the battle, which is her husband, so that he could be killed. And then when they come back, I love Samuel. Samuel's an awesome prophet, by the way, because he has the boldness to stand up to David, look him in the eye, and tell him this great story. And he goes, what would you do with this, David? He goes, well, I'd kill all of them. He goes, interesting, because you're the guy in the story. I don't want to tell you the story. I want you guys to do your homework, so go read that. But then afterwards, he says, but the Lord's not going to take your life, David. No, he's going to do something else. He's going to take the life of your child that you and Bathsheba are about to have. Now, that would cripple any family, wouldn't it? It really would. But how is this connected to Solomon? Well, through the grieving, I love what it says, because it says that even in the moment, through the punishment, as David is watching his child die, he goes to the temple to worship God. So I think David feels the weight, the severity of his sin. And he knows that this is a direct consequence for my attitude of laziness, because my laziness led to me staying home when I should have been out with my men. My laziness led me to go up to the roof to just hang out. And all of a sudden, when we become lazy and lackadaisical and methodical with life, we get comfortable. And through my comfort, I started having sin crouch at my door. And because sin was crouching at my door, I caved. David caved. And he's one of the leaders of our faith, because he had an attitude of comfort, of slothfulness. So how does this go to Solomon? Well, he ends up marrying Bathsheba, David does, and through the pain, they have their moments together, and they end up having another child who happens to be Solomon. Now, I don't know what your life is like. I don't know what your stories are. But I can almost bet if you've ever had a miscarriage, if you've ever lost a child, it doesn't just affect you as the parents, it affects the whole household. It just does. No matter what age group it is, if you've had a stillborn, your kids are going to grow up knowing, because you're trying to keep that memory alive, right? That's what we do. We have burials. We have cemeteries. You may have taken your kids out there to say, hey, this is a sister or a brother that you have never known before. And you start asking questions as you get older and as you go through life. And you start wondering, what would life be like if this person was still here? Solomon grew up like that. They had his brother, sister, whatever, we don't know. The Bible didn't really clarify on what the gender of this child was. We just know that the child was be put into death because of the sin of David. And now Solomon's growing up in this household where David and Bathsheba are grieving together the loss of this child. And Solomon is growing up in this, and they're talking about it. And David's probably having to remember this sin that he has done, which is a direct result of this child's death. So I can almost guarantee you that this conversation came up over and over and over again. And as Solomon started to rise up in his strength and in his wisdom and in his stature, he probably started asking his dad questions about this child. Now, I notice we go over to the cemetery all the time. Dad, what's it like grieving a child? And David gets to pour out his sin and his regret to his son. Now, these conversations only happen at certain levels of their life, of course. You don't want to talk to a 5-year-old about sexual sin. You know, we'll leave that to the preschool. That was a joke, by the way. It's getting younger and younger every day. Okay, that one failed. We'll move on. Too serious. Too soon. I get it. But you don't want to talk to your 5-year-old about sexual sin. So maybe this was a conversation he had with Solomon when he was 13 or 14. Now, you may think that that's still young today, But in that time period, they're getting these guys ready for manhood by 13. And so I'm sure the conversation came up like, hey, Dad, what's your biggest regret in life? David's like, well, it's probably time I tell you, but there is this time where it's when I met your mom, actually, and I did it all the wrong ways. And I had a lot of sin that crept because I had an attitude of laziness. I wasn't out there with my men like I should have been, and I let sin crouch at my door, and through the sin, this sin happened, and through that sin happened, and then all of a sudden, God turned all the wrong things into something right because you were born. And son, I love you to death. But one day you're going to be the king. And I want to train you and teach you all of the things that are going to make you better than I was. That sounds like a conversation that a father would have with their child, right? That sounds like a conversation a king would have with his son who will be promised to be the king. And what David is doing, because David did become a guy after God's own heart. He did. And David did a lot of great things, and God honored him and blessed him abundantly. And through David, through his lineage, will come Christ. And all these great things are going to happen. So he's really trying to instill in Solomon all these great things. And Solomon took to it very well. In fact, Solomon was a man after God's own heart too, for his father's sake, for a while. And so he grows up, he becomes the king. And now Solomon's reigning, he becomes the wisest man who's ever lived, and God has blessed him abundantly. But the apple didn't fall too far from the tree, did it? Let's look at 1 Kings chapter 11. If you ever struggle with memorizing scripture, this is a good tool to do, because David's fall was in what? 2 Samuel chapter 11. Solomon's fall is where? 1 Kings chapter 11. See the connection? Two 11s. Just a little helpful hint if you're looking at memorizing things. So 1 Kings chapter 11 says this. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, a Moabite, an Ammonite, an Edomite, a Sidian, and a Hittite woman, all these ites. All right, we're going to just skip to verse 2. From the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, and neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. And Solomon clung to these in love. 700 wives who were princesses and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart for after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not wholly follow the Lord as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Shemath, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did this for all of his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrificed to their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who appeared to him twice. You see the fall there? It's pretty similar to David, really. It's a sin of the flesh. But all of this came because of their attitude of laziness. And don't misunderstand me, that laziness does not mean that you're simply not moving. Because like I said, David nor Solomon are people that in my mind, I would look at as lazy people, lazy rulers, lazy kings. These guys were active people, always constantly going, but laziness sometimes comes as a result of being comfortable, right? Laziness comes from being comfortable. If you're in a moment where you are comforted and you're comfortable, why would you try to move to another place? And that's the lesson behind both of these men. Solomon come, and I've heard people say, well, polygamy should be a good thing because it's in the Bible. And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, Solomon had 1,000 wives. I was like, well, for one, you're wrong. It's 7.